بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Brothers and sisters, colleagues, friends, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome to the 40th session of the Thought Forum, a weekly forum discussing pertinent Islamic issues. Today's discussion is very interesting. It's entitled The Global Resistance Against Oppression, What the War on Terror Has Brought to the World. And with us is Sheikh Shabir Hassan Ali, who will be giving us a presentation to introduce the topic at hand, and thereafter we'll be having a period of time where we'll be engaging in a discussion to further the topic that we are engaged in. So without further ado, please welcome the Shaykh with salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala Ahli Baytihi al-Tayyibin al-Tahirin. When I was initially given this, first of all, when I was given the honor of speaking at the Thought Forum, and then when the subject was given to me, I think I had a few more white hairs appear, because it's a huge, huge subject that can be discussed on so many different levels. So I'm briefly just going to skim through the ideas and then we can have a discussion, inshallah. So the subject is the global resistance against oppression. First of all, in order to discuss any subject, we have to have definitions so that we all have a common understanding of what we're discussing. So we have two concepts that we have to understand: this concept of resistance and this concept of oppression. And you look in the dictionaries, because we're trying to go for a very straightforward definition that everyone can understand. When we look at this definition, we see that it's a state of being subjugated to a prolonged state of cruelty or unnatural force, and the condition of being afflicted or tormented by this condition, or having a heavy burden upon your shoulders. And when you look at resistance, it can be defined as the capacity that an individual or an organism or an entity has to combat these difficult issues. So the words are connected. When we, nowadays, when we look through the papers, and even when we look through the Islamic books, and we think of these ideas, we see examples of oppression from the beginning. We talk about this war of terror, and most of us believe that this started in 2001 when some idiots flew some planes into buildings. This isn't when the war on terror started. One could argue that the war on terror started back in the early times when Habil, the son of Adam, was killed by Qabil. That oppression, that terrorism, if you like, began at that time. And what we have is a continuation of this. You have to understand, why does this happen? Why does this oppression happen? Generally, when you look at humanity, people are the same. We have different colors and everything, but essentially, the blood that runs through us is all red. If any of us gets cut, regardless of which background we're from, we bleed red. Okay, we have different blood types, let's not get into polemics, but generally, we have the same type of blood. So why then is there this condition where a group wants to apply a certain concept by force on a secondary group? And also, why is it that sometimes this happens and the second group is oblivious of it? They don't even realize that they're being oppressed. They actually think we're being liberated. An example of this, which always comes to my mind, especially given that we live in this part of the world, and we have a lot of people talking about the emancipation of women, that women were given the vote and this was amazing and all of this stuff. And yet, when you look around, when you look at the billboards, when you look at TV, when you look at anything like this, sadly, you see that while women may have the vote, they are generally used as marketing devices to sell product. And they think this is a good thing. We even look at this, we see some of our sisters even, they look at people like Naomi Campbell and all these people and think, "Subhanallah, wow, she's so wonderful, what's going on?" This is also a type of oppression. This is a very serious type of oppression that sometimes we forget. And it's connected to this global war on terror. Because the war on terror that we are being subjected to since 2001 in a more open fashion is not something which is just about Mr. Obama flying drones into anywhere, his little PlayStation using guys choose. It's not about occupying this country and removing such and such dictator from that country, dictator in quotes. It's about changing the mindset of people. This idea of the global war on terror, they don't have a problem with you being a Muslim. If you pray, you fast, you go to Hajj, you do your homes, you do your zakat, everything, they have no issue with that. The problem is when you try and bring Islam into the real world. They operate on a policy, a historical policy, and I know I'm being very brief, but this is because the subject is so huge and I'm having to skim through. So I hope you'll forgive me. If you do, give me a salawat, please. We have this idea of they render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and you render unto God what belongs to God. Now, of course, we know in Quran that Allah Ta'ala has everything. تَبَارَكَ الَّذِي بِيَدِهِ الْمُلْكُ وَهُوَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٍ. In Surah Mulk, we know Allah has got domination and power over everything. So there is nothing I can render unto Caesar, because Caesar has nothing. For a Muslim, for a mu'min, for a believer, I can't give anything to Caesar, because Caesar is irrelevant. The only one who bears relevance in my existence is Allah, is God. But they want us to follow a type of religion that they have morphed their religions into. If we look at the origins of Judaism, all the Abrahamic faiths, Judaism, Christianity, all of this, all of them have the same thread, the same message. Don't let anyone fool you into thinking that Nabi Isa was placid and quiet and docile and didn't resist. You just have to open even the current Bible, and you can see that Nabi Isa, when he saw the money changers outside the temple of Sulaiman, he fought them. He overturned the tables. And he explained why in a long discussion, which I'm not going to go into. The whole idea is to remove that revolutionary, that spirit of resistance against wrong things, against negative ideologies, against negative concepts. If they remove that fire of resistance, then it becomes very easy to oppress a people. And you get a situation, like I said earlier, where the people don't even feel they're oppressed. They feel they've been given freedom and liberation and all of this good stuff. But in reality, they are completely subjugated. If you look at the system we live in, this system of capitalism, this system tells you, very briefly again, that you should go out and make lots of money. It's all good. It's not a bad thing. Islam doesn't say you have to be a pauper. Islam doesn't say anywhere that you have to be a pauper. But what capitalism does, one of the things it does, is it engenders a situation where morality goes flying out of the window. Common decency goes flying out of the window. I'll give you an example. Just today, There was an event that happened out in Africa. I don't know how many of you are aware of it. Where a large building fell onto the compound of the Shia Masjid over there. And of course, we pray that inshallah, any of those people who were injured or la samahallah, any of those people who passed away, Allah should be kind to them and give their families sabr and fortitude. But if you look at the reasoning why this building fell, you'll see this is a very, very simple to understand example of why capitalism is such an evil system. The person, the organization that built the building, what did they do? They cut corners. They cut corners. They bribed government officials to get permits to build something without the relevant safety checks. Why? Because then they can build this building and make more profit. Remember these words, profit. Not profit as in Rasul, but profit as in Sud, as in profit. Yeah. These people, they built huge buildings. And they threw lots of money at it, comparatively. But they took suboptimal parts. They built things with weak product. They didn't use the right equipment. They didn't do the right engineering for a given project. And ultimately, the building fell. There are other buildings now in the same locality which have got fissures going through their roofs because they're of the same type of material. I'm not going to go into the details of that. But the main motivating factor for the person who built this or the organization who built this building was I need to make a buck really quickly. If we look at this current financial meltdown that's happened over here, and when you hear about this all the time in the news, right? You hear about austerity and financial problems and this, that, and the other. But you don't see the bankers' bonuses going down. I hope there's no bankers over here. If they are, they should make healthy contributions. But you don't see these bonuses going down. You don't see these banks suffering as such. But you see the ordinary people suffering and in pain. You see people committing suicide. The rates of suicide in this part of the world have gone through the roof because people can't cope. People have to hold down 2, 3, 4 jobs just to make ends meet. And there is this small layer of the very rich who just keep on getting rich. And they enslave the masses. And so what happens out of that? What happens as a result of that? You can push something down for long enough. Try it. Take a spring. Push it down for long enough. When you release, it will fly up. Take a can of soda, shake it. While it's closed, you're fine. When you open it, you'll have a mess. What happens is resistance to oppression is natural. It is just like when the human body develops an infection. You know, you get the cold or whatever. Your body immediately, these white cells or however the biology of it works, they run towards the source of that infection and they fight it. Sometimes they need external help. Sometimes they don't. So on that note, I know it's been a little bit vague, but I think my time is nearly finished. So I'm going to finish with just 2 or 3 sort of summarizing points, and I apologize for the sort of sketchy nature of what I've presented. It's just there isn't enough time and the subject is quite large, and it's also a shortcoming on my part, so I apologize. But the key things we have to understand about this war on terror and about this idea of resisting against global oppression is that those people who want to oppress us, they want us to do a couple of things. They want us to succumb to these ideas without question, not question these things, based on the idea of render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. They want us to be Muslims. They want us to go to Hajj and Ziyara and everything. They want us to do this a lot. But what they don't want is they don't want us to understand Islam the way Imam Khomeini understood Islam, or the way Imam Khomeini taught us, or the way Rasulullah. And especially, they do not want us to understand Karbala how we should understand it. Karbala is not something where we meet and we cry and we do some matam and khalas, finished. Karbala is a state of mind. Karbala is a state of mind. Karbala is a way to become alive when you are comatose. Karbala is a fire. We shouldn't let them quench that fire, break that fire. Salawat. So to conclude, the global war on terror, it's gonna continue. You know, don't be under any illusion that it's gonna be finished tomorrow. But it will be finished. That is for certain. We know that. We have complete certainty in this. Why do we have complete certainty? Because we have Imam al-Mahdi Jalla Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif. And we know, without any doubt, we know that he is coming, and inshallah he is coming soon. But now there's a bit of homework that we have to do. Because we know the only reason that Imam is not here is not because he's not ready himself. It's not because he wants to take a holiday, as some people say, on Green Islands. No. The reason why Imam is not here, and this is heartbreaking for him, and when we understand it, it's heartbreaking for us, is that we are not ready. That we do not implement that Islam within ourselves properly. That doesn't mean everyone has to go and make, you know, Islamic revolution everywhere and make an Islamic government and all the time be shouting mad about America and all this sort of stuff. We don't need to do that. There are times and places for doing all of that. What we have to first do is, there is the spiritual aspect, which inshallah probably will be discussed next week. And there is the aspect of, we need to make whatever resistance we can to these oligarchs. If that means we don't buy produce from, for example, countries that are offensive and abusive and oppressive to innocents, not just Muslims, innocents, then that's what we have to do. Even if it means, I like a Kit Kat, for example. But the company that makes that Kit Kat is something that is a problem. They work with oppressive entities. Then sorry, I can't have a Kit Kat. I have to go and find whatever the Tesco's equivalent is, and have that. Or better yet, not have it. It's probably not too healthy anyway. So we have to work on ourselves primarily. There is a component of resistance, and I haven't had the time to go into that, which is done in a more militaristic fashion. If we look at our brothers in Lebanon and elsewhere now, for example, the youth in Bahrain, the youth in Saudi, the youth who are surrounding the Haram of Sayyidah Zainab, resisting against the Wahhabis who are out to kill people, there is that form of resistance. There is the resistance of the ulama, where you have people like Sayyid al-Qa'id, Imam Khamenei, giving statements, giving lectures against these things to educate us. Where you have Sayyid Sistani giving lectures to educate us. And there is the component that we have to do. The component that belongs to you and me, each and every one of us. In our small way. Because we are all the sum of everything. Yani, all of us make up the whole, the ummah. We have the famous hadith that of Rasulullah, where he says the ummah is like a single body. If one part of it is in trouble, the rest of it sort of rallies to assist and it feels the pain. But we have to ask ourselves, when we're in the early mornings in the time of Fajr, ask ourselves, do I actually feel that pain of my brothers, for example, in Palestine, in Gaza? Do I feel the pain of my brothers in Syria, in Bahrain, in this place, in that place? We have to also fight against this idea of sectarianizing things. This is also a cancer within the ummah. We mustn't only care about our brothers in Bahrain because we are Shia and they are Shia and khalas. We have to care about all of the Muslims and all of humanity who are suffering, who are in trouble. So on that note, I'm going to be quiet now. And inshallah, we can progress. Sallallahu alayhi wa Muhammad wa alim.
One of the things which it seems like this oppressive system is very good at doing is create a system in which we have no time to actually fight against oppression. We have our 9-to-5 job, and then we need to rest so we can go back to our 9-to-5 job. And on the weekend, we have, you know, like a football match to watch or something. How can we live here whilst that being a necessity, for example, going to work in university, and still be able to fight against oppression?
Awesome. Very good point. We're going to come over to that. Do you want to answer it now? Should we go to the next point? Let's go to the next point quickly. Anyone else want to answer?
The main jihad at the moment of Islamic Republic of Iran is the currency and the bank system. Iran now, over 2 years ago, or in the actual fact 5 years ago, they said we're going to produce a unit of currency between China, India, Russia, South Africa. So this unit of currency is going to replace the present dollars. The present dollar is going to collapse in 2 years' time. So this dollar, which they have it at the moment, the Zionism conference 100 years ago, they said we're going to produce a piece of note designed especially by us. The rest of the animals, they don't know how to design it. And this unit of currency, we're going to give it a value if the animals listen to us. If they don't, it will be only a piece of war. So at the moment you could see the Zionism and the West, they could create a war anywhere they like. The only thing they have to do is print more dollars. And America could produce dollars, and the people in the third world, for example, they could have a farm and try all the year to produce something, and end of the day, the American, they could come and give a piece of paper.
The issue of time occupies people's attention, doesn't allow them to be an active participant in society. How do you feel about that?
I get what the brother's saying, but I think it's a very feeble stance. Because we have 24 good hours in the day. The human being can survive quite comfortably on 5 or 6 hours of sleep. This has been scientifically proven. But even if you can't, let's say you're tired all the time, whatever, even while you're at college, while you're at work, while you're wherever, you can take a stand. For example, let's say you're at work and the people want to, have lunch together. Everyone at work, they want to have lunch together. And they decide that they want to go to a particular restaurant. I'm not going to name any because I can't think of any off the top of my head. A restaurant which is somewhere we don't go, for example. Right? I'm not talking about pubs and stuff, that's a separate thing, and obviously that's different. I'm talking about a restaurant without alcohol that we wouldn't attend because it's got connections with Zionism in some way. You can turn around and say to the guys, and I've done this myself, so I'm speaking from active experience. You turn around and say, look guys, you guys want to go there? Ahlan wa sahlan. You know, enjoy. But I'm going to stay in the office, I'll just have my sandwich, it's all good. So then, after one or two times, these guys, they feel a bit sort of, this isn't nice, you know, he isn't coming with us. And so they say to you, okay, where do you prefer? So you find somewhere which is sensible, somewhere which is good, somewhere which is the right type of restaurant. And you say, okay guys, why don't we go to this particular place? Say a Muslim place, or halal, or something like this, whatever. And they will come, because at the end of the day, food is food. Yeah, even if it's got a nice logo stamped on it, when it goes inside your stomach, it's the same thing. Although having said that, in this country, sometimes the stuff they eat may be horse meat and not beef. But, you know, that's another discussion for another day. So we can actually do the jihad. I mean, that was one small example. But you can do it in many different ways. You know, your friend wants to go to a store, you know, you want to go and buy some books or something. Okay,
Don't go to a store which is from this side. You know, go to a different store. Go online. You have time to discuss with your friends. You know, when you're 9 to 5 at work or college, you're not spending every waking minute in there all the time just buried in your books or buried in your work. You have time to socialize with people. This is normal. So there are ways around it. There are ways. If we are determined, this is the thing. The key problem is if we are determined. If we have the determination and that desire within ourselves to do this activity, we will find a way. But it's very easy for us to find ways of not doing something. This is normal. It's normal in all humans, in all religions. People are very good at finding reasons for not doing something. Instead, we should find reasons for doing something, doing the right thing. I don't know if that helps your point.
I just wanted to make a comment that everything you're saying is so true, so on point. Alhamdulillah, we have this space to discuss everything that we're talking about. I just wanted to say, how would you raise awareness on a larger scale? I mean, it comes down to the lack of education and awareness at the end of the day, that it's not tackled on a larger scale. I don't know if anyone's read 1984 by George Orwell, but it's so amazing how it mirrors today's society, even though it was written in 1948. But as I said, it comes down to the lack of education and awareness. How would you suggest that we raise the awareness on a larger scale?
Sure.
Alhamdulillah, nowadays we live in quite a remarkable time, where we have access to things like the internet. We even have a number of television channels, radio channels, YouTube, all of this stuff. But the best way, really, I feel, to raise awareness would be just to talk to people. Start with the family, start with the close people to you, the people you are in touch with all the time, you know, your husband, your kids, your mother, your father, aunt, uncle, etc. Discuss with them. Discuss the idea, because they will have a perspective on it as well, and you may benefit from that discussion. Every discussion is generally quite beneficial. So you start almost at a grassroots type level. You have to. And the way that we use, or the path we use, is, if you like, similar to the way Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. Gave Islam to the people. He didn't suddenly one day turn up and say, you know, everyone become Muslim, khalas. There was a strong grassroots movement for a long time. And it was difficult. You know, some days maybe they had no results. Some days they had very hard, you know, a lot of hardship. But this is what builds you. Because it makes you stronger in your understanding, and it helps the people that become close towards you. So you work, you work, you work at the grassroots level. It's fine. Alhamdulillah, like I said, we've got these TV channels, we've got newspapers, we've got all of this stuff. But sometimes, you know, sometimes it's good just to sit down and talk over a meal. Just to talk about this subject and say, you know, guys, you know, this is a problem. You know, for example, what you said about 1984. You know, get people to read the book and then discuss it. Have a book club, you know, amongst your friends. These sort of things. You know, it has to happen at the grassroots level, because the people have to themselves understand it, because then they will believe in it and they will move on it. If it's imposed from the outside, then essentially all it is another form of oppression. You're replacing one form of oppression with another form of oppression. Not to say that Islam is oppressive, but when it's imposed like strongly, it's not the way you go about things. People have to willingly submit. So I hope that helps.
Thank you very much. Okay, Shekhna, there was a comment made earlier regarding the economy, regarding replacing the dollar, and regarding the role of capitalism in oppressing the masses. How do you feel about the topic of oppression being linked to capitalism directly in that way, and given more attention than oppression as a generic theme?
I think oppression, when linked to capitalism, is just one facet of oppression. It's not the be-all and end-all. Because today it's capitalism, tomorrow it will be Blahism. It'll be some other ism. This idea of, and I've heard this previously, about, you know, the Zionist Congress getting together and making all of these ideas. Well, I don't know if this is true. I can't comment on it. My information on it is insufficient. But as to whether the idea of capitalism does oppress people, of course this is a given. The whole system is designed for a very small number of people to become remarkably wealthy, and for the masses to become slave. It's very similar, if you sit down and analyze it, it's very similar to the older systems where you had, like for example in Rome, where you had the despots, you had the Caesars, who would just have these slaves. The difference, in my opinion, is that in those days the slaves knew they were slaves. You know, they accepted that, okay, I'm a slave, what can I do, this is my lot in life. Nowadays, the slaves think themselves free. They think themselves free. But ask yourself one question, and this will tell you if you're a slave or a free man. If tomorrow you don't pay your mortgage, what happens? If tomorrow you don't pay your interest-based mortgage, or you don't, for example, pay your car insurance or whatever, any of these things, or you don't pay your bank charges.
But those are contracts that you willingly participated in.
Agreed. They're contracts you willingly participated in, but even the powers that be admit that the contracts are worded in such a elusive manner. Like right now, you've got all of these people, and I'm sure everyone gets these calls from these PPI people. You know, you are owed something like £3,000 because you had a loan from, I don't know, the bank of something or the other. When you never had a loan from this bank. And you scratch your head, you think, what's going on? But the whole idea of the PPI thing was, it was missold. People were sold something, and the blueprint was just blind, the small print was blinding them. They didn't understand. I mean, how many of us can understand the small print on a regular contract we have without getting one of our lawyer brothers to come along and say, okay, you spend a week researching this, come back, we'll have, you know, a shawarma, and then you explain to me. The nature of these contracts is designed to confuse. So this is my stance on it.
Okay. There is one refutation that's thrown at us in terms of how we approach the subject of oppression. They say that, you know, this is the language of somebody else approaching this subject. You Islamists, everything is oppressive unless... Everything is oppressive if it is contrary to Islam. Okay, so if anything is contrary to Islam, it's oppressive. Every ism is wrong, unless it's an Islamicism. Is that how would you respond to such a comment?
I suppose I would have to stop laughing first. But no, you're right. They do understand it like this. But what they don't understand is that Islam is fitrati. It's in the innate nature of every human being. It's natural. It's the most natural state of being, right? It's the only state where you're in balance with your surroundings, with your spiritual life, with your physical life, with your everything. Proper Islam, if we understood it, it's a state of perfect balance, perfect equilibrium, if you like. And this is why when anything comes along to sort of break that equilibrium, whatever it might be called, it could even present itself as Islam in inverted commas. It could, I mean, we have our people of the Wahhabis, they present it as Islam. But of course that's got no relationship to Islam. Apart from maybe they have some words which we share in common, but that's about it. There is no connect between Islam and them. So, I don't know.
Awesome.
This is the stance I have.
In America, the ratio is 1 to 99. 1 rich, 99 poor. And the standard of poor, sometimes it go to the stamps to eat food. Iran now, after 34 years of the Islamic revolution, the rate of millionaires or rich in Iran is 50%. America 150 years, 1 to 99. So this is the other example, the West and America especially frightened from the example of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank you.
Awesome.
I'd like to ask Brother Saad where to get the statistics from, because I think I'll go to Iran to be one of those 50%, but that's a different story. I think there's another aspect of this system that I think we have to be aware of, and it goes back to our understanding of the history of the Western world. Okay, it is not simply just a question of an oppressive society. Okay, what we have is an oppressive society that claims to be democratic and is always in danger of a popular revolution in changing a government through the democratic means, as we have seen in Latin America, for example, under Hugo Chavez and so on. So the most important task that the governments or the ruling cliques in this society has is to distract people as much as possible so that they do not become aware of their people power, you see. We have a kind of an oppressive system. It is oppressive, especially in this time, it is quite clear. You know, you have people, gas rates and the heating bills going up, and people making a filthy rich income on top of that and so forth. And it's not being lost on people. So I think we have to become aware of the times in which we live, that we, if we want to make an impact, we have to know where we fit in with this. Because before this, you had a socialist ideology that threatened the capitalist system. So it was very difficult for people to pull the wool over people's eyes and so on, because you had a coherent opposition with an ideology, and who were interested or who were committed to trying to take over the government by any means necessary, whether it be through the ballot box or through the bullet, you see. Now you don't have that particular opposition, and so these people, the oppressive system itself now is becoming a little more callous, a little more careless, but at the same time it's still in a little more danger because of the fact that people are more aware. You know, and one of the things that we mentioned here, and I think is something that we need to really exploit, is, as you're putting it, grassroots organization, exploiting the media, and also trying among ourselves to organize. You know, I mean, there are many things, many issues that we have in common that I think we could get around. Gather around, you know, and try to make a difference in the Shia community especially, and in the Muslim community at large, and in society in general. And one of the things that we need to do is to show our leadership and our organizational skills as an example for those oppressed people in this society. We know, I'm blabbing on, but we know that, for example, one of the major reasons why Islam spread throughout the non-Arab world was because Muslims, in their organization, in their interrelationships, showed themselves to be people of justice, okay, and people of fairness, and this was something very attractive to them. If we take the leadership in our workplaces, in our schools, in our universities, in calling for justice, in helping to organize people, in showing our fearlessness, and so forth, it might be one of the best ways to spread this deen.
Awesome. Can you think of some ways that in our daily lives we can resist oppression?
Which oppression? I mean, we have to define it. That's very important. I mean, in theory, maybe we'll talk about oppression. However, as Maulana said, you don't know that you are oppressed. You are somehow absorbed to the system, to the way of life that you have. However, the point I want to make is we have two actually different aspects of capitalism. One is the global capitalism, and the other one is domestic capitalism. Now, capitalism is a system which has no alternative at the moment. We don't have any. There was an alternative to it, which was, of course, socialism in the old Soviet Union. There is nothing like that anymore. No one subscribes to that idea anymore. There are milder types of capitalism, like in socialist countries of Scandinavia, and a more sort of blunt type of capitalism like in America. However, we all say we want to fight capitalism, but how? What is the alternative? We may give ideas, Islam is a good religion, Islam is against oppression, Islam is supporting justice. However, when we want to somehow formulate it to our daily lives, we don't have anything at our hands. What alternative are we actually suggesting? Are we providing to replace the capitalist system in Muslim countries? We are actually following the system. We are trying to imitate the institutions of the capitalist society because we cannot think about any alternative. However, capitalism is a system which has modified itself since 18th, 19th century. Up till now, the capitalism of 19th century and 20th century was very different from the capitalism of 21st century. It is a modifying thing. They try to modify it, they try to somehow reduce the oppression which exists in it. They learn from experience, they learn from all the mistakes, like, for example, the crisis that we are in. I'm sure they learn how to come out of this crisis. And, of course, it's sometimes oppressive, like the way they are oppressing Greece to bring it back to the system because it's falling apart. As long as we don't have any alternative for this system, I don't think we can just come out and say that we don't want this capitalism. Otherwise, we are in chaos. We are just supporting anarchy. This aspect, I think, we cannot come out at the moment and say it's oppression, we have to fight it. Yes, we have to modify it, we have to make it a more just sort of system by somehow reducing the benefits of the rich, giving it to the poor. However, in the capitalist society, like for example in Germany, in Britain, in America, the situation of the people, the poor, is of course not comparable with the situation of the poor in, say, for example, in Saudi Arabia or in India or in Pakistan. They have tried to bring the level of even the poor, the level of their living, high. So do not, of course, imagine that I'm a supporter of capitalism, but I'm saying that we have to be fair even when we are somehow criticizing the system. This is about the domestic capitalism. However, we have a global capitalism which tries to devour the wealth of other countries, other people, to give it to their own people. They have problems here, they have problems in America, they are short of resources, they have to bring those resources home from somewhere else. This is the global capitalism. They have to be fed continuously on blood of other people. This is what we can resist, this is what we can call oppression. This is quite palpable. And if someone stands and tries to somehow resist this global capitalism, they crush it from every side. It's brutal. Look what they are doing to Iran. It's brutally being attacked from every aspect, every corner, every hole, loophole, which may be there, that the people can just breathe. They are blocking it because there is a resistance there. They don't want this resistance to be there. So when we come to global capitalism, it's a brutal system. It's a system of competition to find more wealth. Just look at what capitalism did in the past century or in the 19th century with colonialism. Because capitalism is always after resources. So now I think we, in Iran, we are feeling the brutality of capitalism with our blood and flesh. To the depth of our bone, we are feeling it. It doesn't matter. Alhamdulillah, the resistance is there. And if Iran succeeds to break this sort of this pronto attacks which are coming, then the system will collapse. And it's on the verge of collapse because of Iran. That's why they don't want to give up. And I think this is where we can start criticizing to make a hole in this global capitalism. And if the global capitalism is broken, then they have to modify their domestic capitalism as well, because they cannot live like without the sucking the blood of other people.
Shefa, what is the role of Muslims in the West? To make this more practical for us here in this session, what is our role towards resistance?
Well, unfortunately, the Muslims in the West are somehow influenced by the media very much. And I think, although they always talk about Islam being a good religion, we want to follow Islam, and sometimes they criticize many things that which is going in this country, which if they go and take the helm of the power themselves, they see that they have no choice but to make those decisions domestically. However, they are, most of Muslims, many Muslims living in the West, they are blind to this global capitalism oppression which is going on. They don't care about it. And they actually place their sharp criticism not on this global capitalism, but on petty issues in domestic capitalism. And I think the role of the Muslims, whether they are Shia or Sunni, this Shia and Sunni is now something which is being somehow given force by the capitalism itself, because it's very good. Shia has killed Sunni, Sunni has killed Shia. What's better than this? From each side, people are killed, it's good. And it's benefit, it's advantage. So I think what we in the West, what Muslims should do is to educate themselves with regards to this global capitalism. Do not be deceived by the media saying that, for example, the Iranian regime is a brutal regime, the Iranian regime is killing people, there's no freedom. No, we, because, as I said, because we do not have that investigative sort of mind, we tend to believe such things, and then we somehow desist from supporting. And this is something which all Muslims should have in mind.
Thank you very much. Sheikh Hanif wants to comment on that as well?
Yes.
I'd like to try to rebut, or?
respectfully so.
Respectfully.
Yes. I think one of our problems here is an over-excessive concentration on international issues among, in the Muslim community, and a minimized or diminished focus upon our domestic issues. It is absolutely true that both are interrelated. One of the things that we see here in this society, again, we have to know the history, the economic and social history of the society, okay? All of the benefits that Western societies have, that their citizens enjoy, you know, economic unemployment insurance, socialized healthcare, you know, social housing, and all of that, okay? All of that came about as a compromise to a distinct communist threat that was poised to take over all of Europe and North America. And you had in place what you call Keynesian economics to create a kind of a socialist compromise in order to silence the criticisms of the people in the face of what? In the face of the especially financial and industrial oppression of capitalists that the countries, those countries were experiencing in the 1920s and the 1930s. This is one of the reasons why World War II came about. Today we do not have that communist threat. What are we seeing now? We are seeing every week they're taking back some of your social rights. Every week they want to, they're taking back some kind of housing benefit, they're taking back some kind of welfare payment, they're taking back some kind of unemployment insurance, and they're talking about austerity and austerity. At the same time, what do we see? At the same time, we see the that the directors of these companies that say they are forced to overcharge you because of expenses, etc., are raking in millions of pounds in their bank accounts. We are going back. We are not going forward. We have to, and people are suffering. People are suffering. Okay? You have a whole lot of unemployed people out there. The majority of you guys who are in university will not get a job when you leave this place. You will be working in Poundland. Okay? Part-time. Okay? Why somebody is making millions of pounds on you. And people are dissatisfied. And we have to be able to get to come to grips with this. People are destabilized. They are destabilized. Okay? We no longer have a coherent ideology. Okay? An analysis of this thing. When we look at the struggle against international capitalism, especially in Latin America and also in Iran, we have seen modifications in the socialist ideology. Okay? We have seen a kind of a combination between free enterprise, I won't call it capitalism, free enterprise, okay, and the role of a strong government in enforcing the just distribution of wealth in the society. And this is something we can call for here, but we need to study. We need to get together, we need to read some books, we need to debate, we need to invite speakers, and we need to develop an understanding of where we are in the society. We cannot be just focused upon Iran, as much as I love Iran, okay? We can't just be focused on Lebanon. We can't just be focused on China and all these other places and not be dealing with what we have here. We must have like two hands to cooperate with each other in order to change the system and the people out there who want change.
I just wanted to ask you to clarify the second question, just so that we're clear. You said speakers. Is it our speakers or the... Who do you mean that we should watch out when we're speaking?
Yeah, no, I can't.
The last question.
Yeah, no,
can you explain
I see
that?
It.
Just so that, you know, we're aware.
It can mean many things.
Okay.
For example, if there is a speaker or a paper or something, which says something which is against Islam or against truth, against justice, against the rights of people, it doesn't matter who that person is. It doesn't matter how big the amama on that person's head is. Right? If that person is speaking something wrong, then that person is speaking something wrong. End of. Right? You don't just accept the words of someone because they're dressed like this. You don't accept a book because it's written in Arabic, or it has an Islamic title or an Islamic reference. You have to sit down and reflect on what's being said. When you go to any session, and I could mention names over here, but I'm not going to because there's no purpose. Everyone knows who we're talking about. When you go to the sessions of such people, you find that there's a lot of bile and a lot of bitterness in what some of these people say. All the time it's about hate. It's about making la'an. About removing Allah's mercy from X, Y, Z, whatever. All the time it's angry. But it's not the right sort of anger. So this is what I'm trying to get to without putting too fine a point on it.
This, the capitalist system teaches people this leads people to suffer from a syndrome called I'm all right, Jack syndrome. And people, when they're comfortable, as long as they're comfortable, as long as they're all right, they don't feel the need and to, you know, to make an effort. They just want an easy life and just want to number one, focus on what's comfortable and easy for them. So, so a lot of people are suffering from this condition, and Islam teaches us the opposite. You know, when, for example, Ramadan teaches us to sense and feel the pain of others, and sense it. Even if we are comfortable, we should have a taste and experience other people and what they're going through and try to, think about that and make an effort. Imagine if we had the vision of seeing ourselves. Imagine if we had the vision of seeing ourselves as preparing the grounds for our Imam Mehdi, and being the army for him. If we gave all our energy to that one person, we've all seen how I think many of us have seen how one person's dua can make miracles happen. One person from, if they pray from their heart, can make a difference. We all give our energies to something, and if we all gave our energies, if we all put our energy into mainly, making it to stopping oppression, preparing the grounds for Imam Mehdi, we can.
Stand in terms of, I think Sheikh Bahman touched upon it as well, the system of oppression. It's not just about a single type of oppression. There's a system of oppression. Therefore, the people who are oppressed are actually pitted one against another. So therefore, a lot of energy, a lot of time is wasted by those people. For example, the poor guy from Britain has said he's not getting his social security income. He's about to lose his house. But it's all the fault of asylum seekers because they come here and take his job and that. So therefore, one group of oppressive people that are sort of oppressed people is pitted against another. Same with us, sort of like, we've been, and people are focused on very narrow areas. They don't see the whole picture. This is a big issue. And also the education system, I feel, is now, largely responsible for this, because now, the what's being taught in schools, the level of education, the standards are dropping, people aren't getting a proper understanding of issues, Basically, people are being taught to sort of be slaves, to be sort of serve this system. This is really what's being taught in the schools. So I think these are the core issues. It's sort of trying to break out of that.
Assalamu alaikum. I'd just like to touch on Brother Sheikh Hanif point he mentioned, and it is true that. Brother Sheikh Hanif, the student will not have to wait until they graduate. I know already some university students who are already working in Iceland, Poundland, and so on. This, of course, this concept, this point would have been amazing years ago. In this country, the third richest in the world, that a student, university student, would have to actually go and work while studying just to make ends meet. This concept always brought into us from poorer countries in the East, in underdeveloped countries. We have always these role models. We say, we encourage our kids here. We tell them, look, you're taking things for granted. In our home, back home, we have students working and they support their families at the same time. But now it's becoming a reality here. This is because of, I think mostly it's the indifference and the apathy that is taking over this society. The economical situation in this country is very serious. And actually, according to new statistics, more and more gonna fall in poverty after they apply all these stringent welfare system restrictions from April. And no one's complaining. They're sitting there like sitting ducks and accepting what the governments tell them. Now, we don't have to go through all this if the government, if they just cut quarter of the budget that they spend on defense, we would be well off, all of us, right? But they don't. They would rather spend those billions of pounds supporting oppressions outside and leaving the poorer people here to suffer. And the bankers, the people who were the guilty ones in the first place, caused all this chaos. They're getting, one banker the other day, his salary is $1 million, and his pension is $2 million, and his bonus, $500,000. This guy is gonna, not only himself, he's gonna make his 10-20 generation of his family living off his salary without them needing to work, in Poundland or Iceland. Now, all this hypocrisy is going on, and this is oppression proper, economical oppression.
What do we do? No one's saying anything. They should take up to the street, but no one's doing it. They're sitting, oh yeah, we have to come out of this hardship. We soon will come out. There's always a light at the end of the tunnel. But the tunnel is so dark. It's been dark for many years. And there is no light. There is no light. And no one's doing anything about it. So now, the question is, for example, we're talking about resistance. Resistance can come at a sort of community level or individuals, right? Years ago, when first the cartoons things came about the prophet in Denmark, when it started first, what did we do? Nothing. Here, nothing. Well, some of us did, I think, on an individual basis. They said, okay, the dairy product of Denmark, delicious. My children loved it. And we all used to buy them. But since then, we stopped it on an individual basis. Until now, we haven't touched it. But there was an alternative, like the Sheikh mentioned earlier. He said, there's always an alternative. And I believe that if it finishes, if you cannot find an alternative, the world will come to an end. In Arabic says, there's a saying, لو خليت قلبت. And that is why we should be always positively thinking forward about these things and how to handle them. And that's basically it. I didn't touch on Iran because Sheikh Anif didn't want me to. But quickly I would say it anyway. Iran is, the Quran says, they plan and Allah plans. And Allah the best of planners. So Iran, since in infancy, they started to get rid of it in the war of 8 years with Iraq. But it came out of this successful. They tried again with this, not the Arabic Spring, but the Persian Spring. And came out successful as well. Now they tried Syria. But it's not, by the way, this thing in Syria, it's not for Syria, it's not against Bashar. It's aimed at Iran. And inshallah, it will come out successful as well. So, but we have, the least thing we can do is to pray for it. Because really, we can't do anything else. To raise our voice or do something else. But that is for later on. So that's from the Iran point of view. Oppression, it is like bullying, basically. To me, oppression is bullying. And if you sit and don't do anything about bullying, what happens? It gets worse. The bullier will get more encouraged to bully. So we have to express our resistance one way or another to stop that practice. And thank you very much for listening to us.
Up to now, whenever he speaks about socialism or imperialism, they talk about just one angle and one aspect, either economical point or sometimes about military economy. Nobody talks and nobody studies the other angle of it. What is all theologically, sociality of the imperialism? They are more dangerous than economically, and nobody takes notice about them. If you want to overcome this problem, you have to study other angles also. And that's the way to, if you want to face it.
Somebody mentioned the education. Right in front of our faces, we are seeing it. The cost of going to university requires you to be a millionaire. £9,000 a year is beyond the capacity of the ordinary human being. On top of that, they're dumbing down your kids in high school. Regular high school is churning out stupid children. Okay? So they're making you stupid on the grassroots level, and they're making it expensive for those who have survived to get there. And we're just sitting here doing nothing, as the brother said. You know, and this is not just our problem. This is a problem of most English people in this society.
That's
a good question. What are we going to do? And this is a very important question. And the necessity of answering this question dictates our action. For us to decide what to do, we have to organize first. We have to get together first. We have to study first. We have to discuss first. We have to explore options first. And then we could come up with what we're going to do. The other thing that Islam is contributing to, the Islamic point of view is contributing to, is the fact that oppression does not necessarily mean the use of some kind of fascistic dictator, dictatorial force, where you are prevented from speaking and you're looking over your shoulder and they march you off to some gulag at gunpoint. No! Right? The organ of oppression is a couple of blocks up the street. It's called pub so-and-so. It's called television programs. It's called pablum that you read on the metro and in the Evening Standard every day. You know, the last question was talking about, Sheikh Shubair was talking about in terms of the role of the speaker and paper and a book and so forth. What my mind fell upon was how they speak to us on the news. They speak to us in certain ways that take things for granted. For example, it was in the Bank of Scotland that was just bailed out by the people and was owned by the people. They're talking about naturally when it's about time for the Bank of Scotland to revert back to private ownership. You know, and it's so normal. You know what I mean? This is the next stage. You know, our people, thank you for bailing us out, but now we have to sell it to private ownership. So we have another clique of, you know, multi-billionaires coming out of this Bank of England. And we hear this, and we say, oh, yeah, we accept. Because there's no debate about this. We have to create the debate. We have to create the debate. We have to put this, make webinars and you know, podcasts and so forth, because people want an explanation. People want a context. And this is where we come in as Shias. If not, we end up following somebody else who's come up with the answer.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Chef Bahman,
would you like to
do
we have time?
We
do have a few minutes.
It's
okay.
Just very shortly.
Very short.
So I don't have time to just respond to old-fashioned ideas of Sheikh Hanif.
We should do a show.
We don't answer. With all due respect. However, I think all the problems that people are facing here in the capitalist society is because the global capitalism is waning. The global capitalism cannot find the resources. It's not the case that because we don't have communism anymore, we are going back and taking from people what we gave it to them. It's because now there are no resources to give to people anymore. The colonialism era is ended. Money is not coming from Africa. Money is not coming from Asia. That's why they cannot fund all these things. That's why they have to take it back, take all these benefits back from the people. It's the government which is trying to make the ends meet so that they could actually administer society. And what our brother mentioned about defense, the money, if the money is spent on defense, is spent on the domestic welfare, we wouldn't have any problem. They cannot do it because that's the tool of global capitalism. How can they not spend on defense while they need that defense, that weaponry to plunder other people? So the global capitalism is thinking that by enforcing the weaponry, the army, they can continue bringing wealth and then creating welfare inside. But that's going to end soon. And if that's not going to bring revenues and benefit, we are going to see harder times here at home for British people, for American people, or for whatever. So I think, as one of the brothers mentioned, domestic and global capitalism are quite dependent on each other. And we have to break.
Sheikh Bahman, you heard Sheikh Hanif's fiery mini-speech, mobilizing people, activism, the rest of it. Do you agree with him or do you have an alternative?
I don't know whether he has a solution at all. He just says, just shout. What should we do? I mean, shouting against what? Shouting to do what? I don't understand.
Okay. Thank you very much. Please wrap it up with your final comments and inshallah we'll close the session.
I think what was being said about defense budgets and money being spent in particular places, we need to also understand that defense isn't only guns and tanks and planes and all this stuff. Defense is also the media. The media is one of the biggest forms of defense that global capitalism deliberately has. if we look at the programs that have started coming on TV since the last 10, 15 years, you see all of them are geared to one thing. They're geared to like comatosing the human mind. You have programs like, I don't know, American Idol and Britain's Got Talent and all of this garbage. And they get record viewers. They get the number of viewers for these programs is phenomenal. And yet when you have a program, for example, a documentary or something, something sensible, something where people might learn something, that is like locked away at 3 o'clock in the morning on some obscure, hidden away portion of the BBC and khalas. No one even knows about it till you maybe find it if you're lucky on iPlayer. So we need to understand what the media is trying to do. And we need to, we have a say in the media. We have the ability to do something about it. We may not be effective. I'm not saying tomorrow you write a few letters to Ofcom or to the BBC and khalas, you know, everything will change and you'll have intellectual and decent programming. But at least you have to try. And this all comes into the idea of organizing and getting ourselves into the idea of meeting at a grassroots level to do something. Because whenever we do something, I just remembered a speech by Sayyid Hassan. I can't remember the actual words exactly, but I remembered something he said. That when we're working towards an Islamic situation, when we're working to resist tyranny and oppression, we shouldn't be looking for a result in our lifetime. We shouldn't be looking for a result in our children's lifetime. We are doing what is our taklif, what is our responsibility, our duty. The result is up to Allah. As long as we do our work sincerely, the result is on Him. When Imam Hussein stood in Karbala and did what he did, if you look at it very coldly from the books of history without having any Islamic concept, you'd think this was, you know, something which ended negatively, if you like, for Imam Hussein. But Imam Hussein wasn't looking at then. He wasn't looking at Safar 61AH, for example. He was looking at 1400 years down the line, 1500 years down the line, whatever. And he was looking at that result. And we need to learn from that. We shouldn't always... We live in a society that tries to have this idea of instant gratification. You know, immediately I want something, I want an app, bang, I'll click it, bang, 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 I've downloaded it, it's mine. We want things straight away, we don't want to wait, we don't want to think about something, we don't want to reflect. So we need to work on this as well. We need to get rid of this idea of instant gratification and do things properly, think about things, reflect, and then take action. Always think before we take action, as per what Imam Ali tells us, that a wise man will think about something and then act upon it or do it, whereas a fool will do it and then think about it. And there's no point in thinking about it once you've done something which is silly. So I'm going to stop now. And
Ahsanta. Sheikh Al Hassan, thank you for coming today to the Thought Forum and thank you for your presentation.
Thank you
for everyone for all your contributions today. It was a thoroughly interesting discussion.